Our reading is from Proverbs chapter 3, verses 1 to 6. My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commandments in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity. Let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them round your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. Then you will win favour and a good name in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him, and he will make your paths straight.
Chapter 15 to 17, firstly from the NIV UK, and secondly from the J.B. Phillips translation. Anybody remember the J.B. Phillips translation? I still look at it, still got some quite good ways of doing it. Anyway, over to you.
Right, Romans 8, verses 15 to 17. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves, so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship. And by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings in order that we may also share in his glory. And so, to the J.B. Phillips translation. All who follow the leading of God's Spirit are God's own children. Nor are you meant to relapse into the old slavish attitude of fear. You have been adopted into the very family circle of God, and you can say with a full heart, Father, my Father. The Spirit himself endorses our inward conviction that we really are the children of God. Think what this means. If we are his children, we share his treasures, and all that Christ claims as his will belongs to all of us as well. I'm sorry, I didn't read that very well. I'll try again. If we are his children, we share his treasures, and all that Christ claims as his will belong to all of us as well. Yes, if we share in the suffering, we shall certainly share in his glory. Thanks be to God.
I'm not going to give a technical theological definition of assurance, but something which I think is just a way of expressing assurance, just to kind of underline what it means. So what I put there is assurance, if I can suggest this, means knowing that I am in a saving relationship with God through Jesus and the Holy Spirit. So there's several different elements to that. I'm not going to unwind each of them separately. But firstly of all, it's knowing something, knowing for sure. A saving relationship with God, that is not just something which we go out and do and try and obey the rules and so on. It's something which is saving us, making a difference, rescuing us. And through whom? It's through Jesus himself and what he did. And it's through the Holy Spirit, because the Holy Spirit is, as it were, the Trinity within our lives, if I can put it that way. So just a temporary definition of assurance, and that's what we're going to be thinking in terms of this morning. But assurance as a word, a description of Christianity, has been on and off through the couple of thousand years or so that Jesus has been here and Christianity has existed. And one particular experience was in the beginnings of the sort of 17th, 18th centuries, when logic started to get a bit boring for people and they wanted something more out of their religion. And there was a saying that came about during the 1700s describing what can happen to us if we accept Jesus, and it's called the Four Alls. And it's so logical, it's so simple, and yet it means so much. The first is all need to be saved. None of us can make it on our own. There are many religions that say that if we climb the steps and manage to do everything right and don't fall off, then we're okay, we should go to heaven if we climb high enough and far enough. There are other religions which say, well, we don't know which God is the real God, you better trust in as many as you can think of. And if you see another one, you say, oh yes, okay. And that kind of is Hinduism and one or two related to that. And that's kind of keeping your fingers crossed that one day you'll hit the right one. And so it goes on in different ways for different religions. But Christianity simply says that all need to be saved. We have all fallen short and we need to be saved. And the word saved means rescued rather than working your own way out of a difficult situation. We have to work hard when we're saved, but essentially it's Christ who has done the job for us. But he has done the job for everyone, not just a few. I know there are some people in the stricter areas of the Baptist Church who don't define all as everyone in the whole world, but let's say for the moment, and for the Baptist churches I've been involved in, as well as others, all need to be saved. And the second one is all can be saved, that there is no one who, if he or she goes to Jesus, gets a no in return. When Jesus knocks on, well, I won't knock on that, it'll go in the microphone too much. When Jesus knocks on the door of our hearts, if we open it, yeah. If we keep it shut, no. It's up to us, not up to Jesus. So all can be saved. And then the third of the four alls is all can know they can be saved. And that's the one that particularly changed the whole structure of the Christian church, particularly in the UK and in the empire as it began in those days and started to continue, was that all can know that they are saved. It was in the traditional churches, particularly the national churches that existed around the world in those days, that you don't actually know. You just have to do the things. You have to go to church. You have to go through the same order of service and so on. But you never really know. And there was a time, about 20 years ago now, where I used to run an update. It was our own update, which I wrote with a group of friends, of the Alpha Course as a follow-up to Alpha. And we ran that at various churches around between Crookan and Yeovil and that sort of area. And in one of them, and it only happened this one time, but I know a lot of other people felt it, we talked about knowing that you were saved. And this was somebody who'd been going to church for pretty well all her life and said, well, you can't know you're saved, can you? We just have to do what we can do and go to the services and then hope for the best. And I said, no, you can. So the rest of that evening, where we divided into little table groups, was quite interesting for people on the knowing about these things. And the knowing, number three, is the one that we focused on this morning. But then out of the four alls, just to conclude them, it's all can be saved to the uttermost. And the uttermost, of course, means all sorts of things. It means having an eternity with God and Jesus and others, rather than just now. It means being filled with the Holy Spirit, rather than just having a small touch of the Holy Spirit in our lives. It means all sorts of things. There's no end and no limit to this. So those four alls, they've been a saying for quite a long time now, and I think it just puts into a nutshell so much when we think about what it means. But having defined the surroundings, is assurance that confidence, or is it arrogance? Might seem arrogant to quite a lot of people. We're just going to think for a moment about where it might seem arrogant, and then spend the rest of the time looking at confidence. There could be many people who, when they meet and talk with Christians or go into churches, could think that talking about assurance, talking about knowing something that you just believe in without actually having the facts, isn't that a tiny bit presumptuous? Could you imagine people saying that and thinking that? People who might say, who do you think you are to claim you know what can't be proved? Who do you think you are to say you're right and everybody else is wrong? Who do you think you are to say there's no other religion that can do the same as your religion? Of course you can't. That's arrogance. Not just a tiny bit of arrogance, but a lot of arrogance. And it might end up these days with, not that we care what you do at all. Because there was a time, certainly within the last several decades, where generally many or probably most people, certainly in the UK, would have been quite interested to think about and talk about religion to somebody who was a Christian, or to go into a church or whatever, maybe say, well, that sounds arrogant, maybe say the sort of things that I've just put on the screen there. But these days, people tend to say what's on the bottom line. You believe what you want, I don't care. If it's right or wrong, that's your business. Nothing to do with me. I'll get on with my life, you get on with yours. But there's still that feeling that assurance can be thought of as perhaps a little bit arrogant. So why should it not be arrogant? Yes, we've left Charlie Brown, we're going on to Snoopy now. How can we be confident? Christian assurance, confidence, or arrogance, how can we be confident in assurance? Well, there are several factors. In fact, there are quite a number, but I'm only going to give you about half an hour on each of three at the moment. No, not half an hour, about 5 minutes on three at the moment. There's three that I'm going to give an idea or two on. One is the bridge of faith, because faith is a bridge. Number two is the assurance of the Holy Spirit. And number three are the fruits of the Holy Spirit. So the three things that can underline a bit what can happen to us and how we can feel by way of assurance. So let's first of all look at number one, the bridge of faith. Because faith is a bridge from one side to the other, which I'll go into in a little bit more detail in a moment. But we've got two bridges here. We've got, on the right, we've got the Clifton Suspension Bridge. And anybody walked across the Clifton Suspension Bridge? It's a bit scary, isn't it? It's a bit scary even driving across the thing, because it's so high up, and you have suddenly come out of being at ground level to being right, looking down there. And somehow that journey of faith can be a little bit scary. But thankfully for the Clifton Suspension Bridge, it's not that long. Even if you have to walk across it, it doesn't take very long. So the faith journey can be different from person to person. But if you look on the left, that is a very posh, presumptuous kind of footbridge built in Burton-on-Trent across the River Trent. And it was built by somebody who was extremely wealthy and wanted to show it off 100 and so on years ago. And, or more than that, it's a footbridge because it was built before the width of cars. So you pretty well had to walk along it. And there are two car bridges either side. But the benefit of that bridge is that it's very low. So you just look over and you see all the swans and so on, and it's not scary. But it is very long. It takes ages to walk from one side to the other. But when you get to the other, you go into a flower garden of a very presumptuous I won't say Midland Sky, you know. It's really, really presumptuous flower garden from the working part of town, working class, what a term, to a new part entirely. And that with the Clifton Suspension Bridge, you go from one type of Bristol to another type. So faith is a bridge. It's the bridge of faith. What do we mean by the bridge of faith? Very simple, really. Faith, if I can describe it in this way, is quite simply a bridge between what we know as historical fact and what we don't know but believe. I mean, there are many much bigger definitions than that, but I'm just trying to keep things very simple at the moment. A bridge between what we know as historical fact and what we don't know but believe. For example, we knew that the Andromeda Galaxy was next door to us, but it wasn't until some people looked into some new kinds of telescope this last week or so that they saw there was a kind of shadow galaxy around it. I thought, wow, we didn't know that, but now we do. And there are so many things that we've discovered as time goes on. So faith is that bridge. And that bridge is a very important part of our assurance, because when we have crossed that bridge, we look back and we say, yeah, I know now what it's like over here. I used to look across and think, well, yes, I'm not sure. And then having taken that journey of faith. And there's a lovely verse in Hebrews, mentioned it at the beginning, or one of the translations. I love the Shakespearean translation of this verse that is in the King James Version of the Bible, which I put at first there, Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Don't you think that's a lovely way of putting it? Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Although put into more practical terms, as it were, if you could do that, in the NIV UK, it says, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. If you're uncertain and unassured sometimes, just have a little turn to Hebrews 11 and chapter 1, and it puts it in such a nutshell there. And there's the Proverbs verse that we had read to us for our first Bible reading. And that few verses out of Proverbs have a verse which means so much to so many people. It's one of the ones that stand out in the Old Testament. It's asking us to do something. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not upon your own understanding. In all your ways submit to him, and he will make your paths straight. Although in one of the other translations it said, he shall direct your paths. And it says there's so much depth, isn't there, in that verse. And yet if you look at it at its simplest, you start by faith. What you say is trust in the Lord. Don't depend on your own understanding, but trust in the Lord. And the result of that, when you trust in, don't lean on your own understanding and do submit to him, he will make your paths straight. He will direct your paths. He will make the way clear. Isn't that a wonderful thing? If you trust in God when you have no idea where to go or what's ahead of you, so often he makes it clear. And that's assurance. Sometimes he doesn't make it that clear. And we don't find out for a long time that there's a reason for doing that. And most of us will have experiences of when we've trusted and we just haven't seen things happening for ages and ages and ages. That's the bridge of faith. And then the other two headings I was mentioning are explained really simply in the texts that relate to them. The assurance of the Holy Spirit depends, I think, to a large extent on the fact that when we're Christians, we are family and we have each other as well as Jesus and God as our head. And so in the NIV UK, this is most of the part of one of our Bible readings, of course. The Spirit you receive does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship. And by him we cry, Abba, Father. Daddy is what Abba means. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs. And the assurance there is because the Spirit, as it says here, testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. So we are family, not just with God, but with each other. And then we have that version from J.B. Phillips, which uses slightly different words, puts it so well. You've been adopted into the very family circle of God. I like that, the family circle, the entire, church around the world and beyond nowadays. And you can say with a full heart, Father, my Father. The Spirit himself endorses our inward conviction that we really are the children of God, endorses our assurance. Think what that means. If we are his children, we share his treasures. And it's actually Lucy who says that, isn't it, in the Charlie Brown cartoons? But then the other thing is the fruits of the Holy Spirit. The results of receiving the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, just tell me this. Have you been able to wake up every day and look back at the previous day or previous week, and you've looked at those and you said, tick, 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 tick? Not always. Not often. Not sometimes. But we receive the fruits of the Holy Spirit, which give us a very, very confident assurance that that's God in our lives, the Holy Spirit working out our lives. So those were the things that I was suggesting we had to think about, to look at assurance and what it is and what it means. Firstly, we can know that we are saved. Secondly, we can cross the bridge of faith. Thirdly, we have the Holy Spirit's assurance. Fourthly, we are family. And fifthly, we are gifted with the fruits of the Holy Spirit. Isn't that wonderful? We don't deserve it, but we receive it. We have faith, but we also can have assurance. But I'm not quite finished yet. What if we don't feel assured? Either we've never felt assured, or there are some hard times when we don't feel assured, or just on occasional days when things go badly wrong, we don't feel assured. I'll just put down some suggestions as to what we can do. The firstly is look for the fruits of the Holy Spirit in our lives and in others' lives and in the church. Look for the fruits. Secondly is don't worry. Those two words are very well known here nowadays since Dave Hewitt preached on them the other week, the other month, wasn't it now? Don't worry. Simply open your heart and mind to God. Wait on the Holy Spirit. Maybe talk to someone.